Hello, everyone. We have everybody in here. I'll give everybody a few seconds to get in. So it's good to see you. I'm going to pray before we get started here for the second session this morning. Father, thank you for these words you've given us. I thank you that they're living and powerful. I thank you that you show us wonderful things out of them and that you teach us who you are. And Father, for this week, as we're learning about faith, what a wonderful thing it is to see through this man, Abraham. So I thank you for this in the name of Jesus Christ. We are going to pick up in chapter 18 of Genesis. You can turn there. And thank you, Tom, for the privilege of opening these scriptures with this church. This is such a blessing here. We're going to be doing chapters 18 and 19 for the next 30 minutes or so. And by timeline, this follows very soon after chapter 17. There isn't a lot of time. Maybe it's a couple days, maybe a couple weeks. At most, it's a couple of months. He's 99 years old in chapter 17. And by the time Isaac is born, Abraham is 100. So there's not a lot of wiggle room in terms of the timeline here. And let's just get started. We're going to read. I'll be mostly in the NIV this morning. Okay? So Abraham has specific words to believe. The covenant was reiterated and expanded just in the last chapter, right? Very shortly ago. And the promise was repeated. And he also knew that this was upcoming, right? All of this information is stuff that Abraham had just heard. So verse 1 says, "The Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day." This verse kind of gives us a summary of what's going to happen next. Verse 2, "Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. He said, 'If I've found favor in your eyes, my lord, do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat so you can be refreshed and then go on your way now that you have come to your servant.' 'Very well,' they answered, 'do as you say.' So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. 'Quick,' he said, 'get three seahs of fine flour.'" I don't know how much that is, but it's enough for bread, right? "Knead it, make some bread." And then he ran to the herd, and he selected a choice tender calf, gave it to a servant, who hurried to prepare it. Then he brought some curds and milk and the calf that had been prepared and set these before them. While they ate, he stood near them under a tree. "Where is your wife Sarah?" they asked him. "There in the tent," he said. So up until this point, we don't know if Abraham knows who these three are, but they appear to be travelers, right? And he's being hospitable to them. There is a change here in verse 10 with who's talking, because previously it was "they said." It was the three of them, right? The NIV here says, "then one of them said," and really the text just says "he said." And there's one of these three that is now going to speak for God. And that continues here as we're going along. It appears that there's one who's speaking for God of these three. And he says, "I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son." Now Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind him. Abraham and Sarah were already very old, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So Sarah laughed to herself as she thought, "After I'm worn out and my Lord is old, will I now have this pleasure?" Then the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh? Will I really have a child now that I'm old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son." Sarah was afraid, so she lied and said, "I did not laugh." But he said, "Yes, you did laugh," right? Sarah laughed within herself, though. It doesn't say that she laughed out loud, right? But does God know her heart? Yeah, he knows her heart. And the reproof, "Is anything too hard for the Lord?" We saw just, was it yesterday, 2 days ago? Days kind of go like this at camp, right? But why does God give reproof? He gives it to help faith, right? God doesn't give reproof because he enjoys telling us how stupid we all are. I mean, I'm stupid all the time, but that's not why God gives me reproof. It's so that I can go back to believing what he said. And so this angel talks for God and says, is anything too hard for the Lord? Because at this moment, Sarah was not believing the promise, right? And this is, it's a common challenge with the things that God tells us, is that they're not going to line up with all of the senses information, right? That is a normal piece of how this works, because God is able to do the impossible, right? And so his logic is not our logic. You know, it was irrelevant to God's promise that Abraham and Sarah were both old, right? It was irrelevant to God's promise that she was past the age of childbearing. Those were facts. That was true. But God had still promised, right? And so at this moment, she needs some help. And God helps her. Keep a finger here. Turn to Hebrews 11. Because it appears that she received the help from this verse here in Hebrews 11. Abraham comes up in multiple verses in this chapter. We've looked at some of them. But Sarah also comes up here. In Hebrews 11, verse 11, it says, and by faith even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise, right? God still highlights her as having faith, even though she doubted too, right? He remembers faith. Our God is so good to remember faith and to honor it. If just a little note, if any of you are looking at the 1984 NIV, it attributes the faith here to Abraham. The 2011 and the King James attribute it to Sarah. That is correct as far as everything I've been able to look. This is attributed to Sarah here. If you want to know all the details as to why, I can talk to you about it later. But this is Sarah that is spoken of here. So if you happen to have the 1984, they did make the correction in the 2011 for that. But I think this is beautiful, right? God doesn't take all of our moments of unbelief and subtract them against our moments of believing him, right? And come to some sort of an equation. What he remembers, you know, this is an accurate record of Sarah doubting and needing help. But what she's remembered for in Hebrews is when she believed him. Isn't that wonderful? What amazing grace for God to remember when we would be just humble enough to believe him, right? You know, God knows he's right. It's completely ludicrous that we would think that we'd be right over him, right? But he still honors that. Turn back to, are you already back in Genesis? Yeah, okay, Genesis 18. We'll be back there. And God is happy to help with our faith. All right, let's go to verse 16 here. It says, when the men got up to leave, they looked down towards Sodom, and Abraham walked along with them to see them on their way. Then the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? Abraham will surely become a great and powerful nation, and all nations on earth will be blessed through him, for I've chosen him so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just. So the Lord will bring about for Abraham what he has promised him. This is an odd question. Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? And then God answers the question. I think this is, I pondered over this for a while. Why does God ask this question, and then why does he answer it? And put it in his word, right? Of all the things he could have recorded, he chose this. God had made a covenant with Abraham. He had a relationship with Abraham. His reason for not hiding what he was about to do was because he had this relationship with him. He had this covenant with him. And so God answers the question, why, you know, because God could do what he wants, right? Does he have to check in with Abraham before God makes decisions on things? No, he doesn't have to check in with him. But God chooses to show this information, tell this information to Abraham, because he has this covenant with him. He has this relationship. And so he tells him, verse 20, then the Lord said, the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is so great and their sins so grievous that I will go down and see if what they've done is as bad as the outcry that has reached me. If not, I will know. The men turned away and went toward Sodom, but Abraham remained standing before the Lord. So one of two things happened here, okay? As we're going to see in the next chapter, there's two angels that show up at Sodom. We had three at the beginning, right? I'm not sure which is the case here. Either all three left, and at some point on their travels, it just was two instead of three, right? And Abraham is now speaking to God the way you and I might speak to God, where there's no physical form in front of us, right? Or potentially two of them actually left, and he's standing in front of that third one who was speaking for God. Either way, Abraham is not confused as to who he's speaking to, right? He doesn't just think this is some guy or some messenger. He knows that the communication he's been having has been with God. And so even though two or three head out, he remains before the Lord. So let's see what he says. Verse 23. Abraham approached him and said, "Will you sweep away the righteous with the wicked? What if there are 50 righteous people in the city? Will you really sweep it away and not spare the place for the sake of the 50 righteous people in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing, to kill the righteous with the wicked, treating the righteous and wicked alike. Far be it from you. Will not the judge of all the earth do right?" How does Abraham even know this? Do we have a verse that says that God's told him that he's the judge of all the earth? We don't. Hebrews 11. Let's go back there again. Keep your finger here. Abraham's not wrong about that, though, right? He correctly knows who this God is, that this God is a righteous judge, that this God would not destroy the righteous with the wicked, right? He knows this. The verse we went to early on this week, Hebrews 11, verse 6. It says, "And without faith, it's impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him." Abraham had faith, right? Abraham not only believed that God existed, but he sought God. And what happens if you will seek God? He'll be found, right? Abraham knew this God because he'd been seeking God. They had a relationship. So when and how he learned about God being a righteous judge over the all of the earth, I can't tell you that. I don't know that. God doesn't tell us. But he was one who sought God. And so God was very happy to reveal himself to Abraham. This question that he has of God is based on faith in knowing who God is. Turn back to Genesis. And verse 26. The Lord says, "If I find 50 righteous people in the city of Sodom, I'll spare the whole place for their sake." Then Abraham spoke up again. Here's another thing he knows. "Now that I've been so bold to speak to the Lord, though I am nothing but dust and ashes," right? He knew who he was in comparison to this God as well. "What if the number of the righteous is 5 less than 50? Will you destroy the whole city for lack of 5 people? If I find 45 there," he said, "I will not destroy it." And this continues, right? We keep going. Once again, he spoke to him, "What if only 40 are found there?" He said, "For the sake of 40, I will not do it." Then he said, "May the Lord not be angry, but let me speak. What if only 30 can be found there?" He answered, "I will not do it if I find 30 there." Keep going. How about 20? What about 20, God? Nope, won't destroy for 20, right? And then 32, verse 32, he says, "May the Lord not be angry, but let me speak just once more. What if only 10 can be found there?" He answered, "For the sake of 10, I will not destroy it." When the Lord had finished speaking with Abraham, he left, and Abraham returned home. The conversation had finished, right? God didn't storm off in a huff because this conversation had lasted longer than he wanted to, right? They were just done. We're going to come back here because That's a longer conversation about this than I would have thought you might have, right? You might think you'd start with the big number and maybe go down real, real fast. I don't know. I'm not Abraham, so I don't talk like he did. But nevertheless, this was a continued conversation, and God continued to answer him and was happy to do so. So keep that in mind. We're actually going to keep reading here, but we will come back to this. So Genesis 19:1 says, the two angels arrived at Sodom in the evening, and Lot, so now Lot's in the city, right, was sitting in the gateway of the city. When he saw them, he got up to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. My lords, he said, please turn aside to your servant's house so you can wash your feet and spend the night, then go on your way early in the morning. No, they answered, we will spend the night in the square. But he insisted so strongly that they did go with him and entered his house. He prepared a meal for them, baking bread without yeast, and they ate. Before they had gone to bed, all the men from every part of the city of Sodom, both young and old, surrounded the house. They called to Lot, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so we can have sex with them. Lot went outside to meet them, shut the door behind him, and said, no, my friends, don't do this wicked thing. Look, I have two daughters who have never slept with a man. Let me bring them out to you, and you can do what you like with them. But don't do anything to these men, for they've come under the protection of my roof. Okay, so this is the point when I get a little bit queasy reading this story. And there's a lot of culture shock here, right? In addition to just the grossness and evilness of the situation and Lot's response, right? There are cultural things that come into play with the why of how Lot came to this conclusion, right? And so we want to take a step back from how genuinely, plus culturally horrific this is. Okay, what can we learn here, right? What is there for us to see in this? Because if any one of us were in this situation and we're in our house and a mob of people come to the house to break down the door for this, our response, walking with God or not, our response would not be to toss our daughters outside, okay? That's not going to happen in our culture generally, right? Let's hope not. But Lot had a problem. This is really what it comes down to. Lot has a huge problem. Abraham also had a problem. We're going to go back and look at that for a second. So go back to chapter 18. And verse 20, the Lord said, the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is so great, and their sin is so grievous, that I will go down and see what they have done is as bad as the outcry that's reached me. And if not, I will know, right? Abraham knew that Lot was there. So Abraham had a problem too. One that was very big, right? He loves Lot, and that city's about to be destroyed. And what Abraham did is he went to God with this problem. That was his response to this problem. Abraham had other options. Abraham was very wealthy. He probably had some really fast camels or horses or whatever that he rode, right? He could have sent someone to Sodom to go warn Lot, grab him, right? He could have gone to his tent, drunk a bottle of whiskey, and gone to sleep in depression. Right? He could have made other choices with the problem that he had, but he went to God when he had this problem. And you know, why the long back and forth? This is an I think, but if I were Abraham and I asked the question, what about this big number? And God said, I won't destroy it for that many. I might still be worried about Lot. Be like, okay, Lot's one dude. And maybe I know or maybe I don't know how big his family is at this point. I don't know if he knew that information. But I might still be anxious and concerned about him. And so even though he had his first answer, he went back to God. So this is an I think. Do I really know exactly what was in Abraham's heart? No. But I do know what can be in the hearts of people when we can get an answer from God. And we're still worried. We're still anxious. So you can go back to God. And he will keep working with us. He will keep answering. He will keep being gracious to us in our concern, in our anxiety. But that's what Abraham chose to do. Keep a finger here. Turn to Proverbs 14. You know, Lot comes up with his own solution for this. And Proverbs 14 tells us, how lovely that is. Right. In verse 12, I'm going to read this one in the King James. Proverbs 14:12. There's a way which seems right unto a man. It seems right. It's the best option. It's the best solution. There isn't any other option. But the end thereof are the ways of death. When Lot decided to come up with his own solution, the end was the way of death, right? And for whatever reason, cultural or otherwise, that for him that was the best solution. Nevertheless, it was his solution, right? It was his solution without talking to God, without crying out for help, without possibly, as we learned, I think it was Nathan who mentioned, possibly without even considering God, right? Maybe he didn't outright say, oh, God hasn't, like, God can't do anything here, but just didn't even think to ask. And so this is where he ends up, is with his own solution. And it's awful. Back to Genesis 19. Verse 9, get out of our way, they replied. This fellow came here as a foreigner. Now he wants to play the judge. We'll treat you worse than them. They kept bringing pressure on Lot and moved forward to break down the door. His solution didn't even work, right? Sometimes our solutions might work temporarily, slightly. That can happen, right? But in comparison to whatever answer God has, how weak and useless are our solutions going to be? Pretty weak and useless, right? Don't turn there, but Isaiah 55, some very familiar verses to this church. Verses 7 through 9 says, let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. God has an answer for problems, and his ways are going to be much, much higher than our ways. Much, much more beautiful than our ways, right? Even our ones that aren't outwardly so evil-looking as this one that Lot had, right? Or the ones that maybe kind of work for a short period of time. If it's not God's ways, then I'm letting myself have, I don't even want to call it second best because it's so far below God's, but let's call it second best for this moment. If I'm choosing my ways over God's, I'm digging around in the muck when I've been given everything by a God who loves me. Genesis, let's go back and keep reading here. So Genesis 19, let's start again, verse 9. Get out of our way, they replied. This fellow came here as a foreigner, now he wants to play the judge. We'll treat you worse than them. They kept bringing pressure on Lot and moved forward to break down the door. But the men inside reached out, pulled Lot back into the house, and shut the door. Then they struck the men who were at the door, young and old, with blindness, so that they could not find the door. We could have started with this. Right? We could have started with this. We didn't have to do our own way. Lot didn't have to do his own way. He could have started here. So not only was his solution disgusting and evil and didn't work, it was also completely unnecessary. That's really sad. And, you know, again, we have to take a step back, right? Because none of us are going to do this specific thing. But, you know, we will have a problem and not think to talk to God about it. I have problems, and I don't think to talk to God about them. Or his answer isn't fast enough or doesn't seem like it's going to somehow work with all of the situational pieces that I'm aware of. Having my own answer is unnecessary because God's still God and he knows a lot more than we do and has much higher ways than we have. All right, let's keep reading here. Verse 12, the two men said to Lot, do you have anyone else here, sons-in-laws, sons or daughters, or anyone else in the city who belongs to you? Get them out of here because we're going to destroy this place. The outcry to the Lord against its people is so great, he has sent us to destroy it. So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-laws who were pledged to marry his daughters. And he said, hurry and get out of this place because the Lord's about to destroy the city. But his sons-in-laws thought he was joking. And we see the teeny tiniest bit of faith here in Lot, right, in just this moment. He does believe what these angels are speaking to him. He spent a lot of time with Abraham. He knew something about this God, right? We won't go there, actually, but in 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 7 and 8, God calls Lot righteous and that he was vexed by everything he saw around. It bothered him, the sin that he saw. But as we've looked at earlier, he had his own priorities. He was willing to put up with that because he had reasons for being in Sodom, right? Unlike Abraham, Lot wasn't one who was willing to have God be the leader and him follow, right? He had his own way, and he had something that he wanted to do in these cities. But we do see a little tiny bit of faith here, and it winds up saving his life. So verse 15, with the coming of dawn, the angels urged Lot, saying, hurry, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, and or you will be swept away when the city is punished. When he hesitated, the men grabbed his hands and the hands of his wife and his two daughters and led them safely out of the city, for the Lord was merciful to them. Incredibly merciful, right? And as soon as he had brought them out, one of them said, flee for your lives, don't look back, don't stop anywhere in the plain, flee to the mountains or you'll be swept away. But Lot said, no, my lords, please, if your servants found favor in your eyes and you've shown great kindness to me in sparing my life, I can't flee to these mountains. This disaster will overtake me and I'll die. Look, here's a town near enough to run to and it's small. Let me flee to it. It's very small, isn't it? Then my life will be spared. What's with Lot and cities? I can think of some things. Here in the United States and in probably a good portion of the world anyway, if you want to go to a city and you live in the country, you can just drive there. And maybe it takes you an hour, but it's not really that big of a deal, right? Cities were an important thing for, you know, socioeconomic, all sorts of reasons, okay? Without getting into the history of Mesopotamia, cities were very important. But it wasn't that Lot just likes cities and Abraham just likes the country and trees. Like, that's not what's going on. Keep a finger here again. Go back to Hebrews 11. I should have just told you to put a ribbon there, but didn't think of that at the beginning here. You know, there is an appeal to cities, right? And he's got his own agenda. But Abraham had a different priority, is what this boils down to. Hebrews 11 and verse 8. Look at this. Abraham actually wanted a city too. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for inheritance, obeyed. I switched to King James. That's all right. And went out, not knowing whither he went. By faith, he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles, that's tents, with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city who hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Right? That's the city that Abraham was looking for because he had different priorities. Lot's priorities were wrapped up in this life. Whatever the specifics of those were, it was wrapped up in this life. And so when he's told to flee, he's looking around and looking around, what can I do to get at least a little bit of what I've been wanting? Because that's obviously going to be destroyed. And he finds this little city. He says, please, just let me go there. Because whatever it is about these cities, there was at least something there for him, right? Abraham was looking for what God had promised in the future. Abraham was looking for a city too. But his priorities were to be waiting on God for the one that God had for him. When God says act, like with circumcising, he didn't wait around. Same day, right? So when God says act, he was ready to act. But when God said wait, he was willing to wait too. You know, do we believe that God's as good as he says he is? That's a big question. And it's one we have to ask ourselves repeatedly, because it's not something you can answer once and then be good for the rest of your life. You know, do we believe what God has promised us in future is just as certain as the sun coming up in the morning? Do we really believe it? Abraham did believe what God said about the future. And so that's what he was looking for. He didn't need cities in Mesopotamia the way Lot did, because he was looking for that. You know, and if we do believe those things, if we do believe God's really that good and what he says is going to happen, then it's going to show. It's going to show in the decisions we make. It's going to show in a lot of different ways. Verse 21. Look at God's mercy here. He said to him, "Very well, I will grant this request to you. I will not overthrow the town you speak of. But flee there quickly, because I cannot do anything until you reach it." That's why the town was called Zoar. By the time Lot reached Zoar, the sun had risen over the land. Then the Lord rained down burning sulfur on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. Thus he overthrew those cities and the entire plain, destroying all those living in the cities and also the vegetation in the land. But Lot's wife looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and returned to the place where he had stood before the Lord. Man, what do you think was on his heart? He went back to that spot. And I'm sure he knew that God wasn't just in that spot, right? But what a thing to be like, I talked to God about this. I had my answer. It's the next morning, and he goes back there, right? And what's he do? What does he do? He stood before the Lord. He knew who he was standing in front of still, right? He looked down towards Sodom and Gomorrah, toward all the land of the plain, and he saw dense smoke rising from the land like smoke from a furnace. So when God destroyed the cities of the plain, he remembered Abraham, and he brought Lot out of the catastrophe that overthrew the cities where Lot had lived. The last thing I want to mention here with this section is this phrase, he remembered Abraham. If you have time this week and you want to look at things that God remembers, rather people that he remembers, it's very lovely to see. We've learned in this church, remembering isn't just I could recall a fact for a test, right? Probably 2/3 of you are thinking of George Washington now, and the rest of you would be like, why would they be thinking of George Washington? Well, it's because we've had that as an example of remembering, right? We're not regularly thinking about the fact that George Washington was the first president of the United States. It's not something that throughout our days we bring to remembrance, right? But it's something that we could answer on a test, generally, right? Remembering is more than just having a fact somewhere in my memory bank. It is bringing to mind. It is recalling. It's bringing to the forefront of my memory. This is God who remembered Abraham. God didn't forget that Abraham existed, right? It's not that God had to recall Abraham from his stack of information. But when it says God remembers a person, it's amazing the deliverance you see come right afterward. When God remembers this now, you know, God remembers justice. And now you have God's full attention. Many other people could have God's full attention at the same time because he's God, right? But you have his full attention. What's going to happen if the creator of the heavens and the earth, the Father who loves you, has his full attention on you? You think there's going to be blessing that comes from that? Absolutely, right? And so here, when God destroyed the cities of the plain, he remembered Abraham. He remembered his covenant with him. He remembered his promise. He remembered his man. And because of that, he brought Lot out from these cities. As God's children, we're we're at the forefront of his memory, right? God remembers us. And he's going to be strong for us the same way he was strong for Abraham. So we will continue tonight.